And welcome to the 281st show entitled Money Matters. Today's title, Upward and Onward. Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Indices mentioned are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Investing involves risk. Depending on the types of investments, there may be varying degrees of risk. Investors should be prepared to bear loss, including total loss of principal. Money Matters is about money, as money does matter, and the matters of money affect us all in some way or another. Whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it, controls our economy, our country, our planet, in some way or another, controls the very way we live our lives. It's about your money, your lack of it, or abundance of it. It's about our lives and livelihood. In short, Money Matters is about you. My name is Mark Cunaberty. Thanks for joining me today. 281 shows later, here we sit. Okay. So, the Dow. Let's take a look at our indexes today. Dow sitting at 24,313. And the high being somewhere around 26,900, set 4 or 5, 6 months ago. And the recent low, somewhere around 21,000 something, memory can't bring that number up, but that was, I think that was pretty much close to right around Christmas Eve. So the large number above us, we're at 24,313. Today, 12:10 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, Thursday, January 17th, 2019, in the year of our Lord. And so if you're listening at this show at a different time, indices mentioned may not be accurate at the time if you're hearing the show. So at 24,313, the big number below us is 24,000. That could be regarded by technical analysts as support. The number above us, the big number, 25,000, might be called resistance. But always, as covered on this show, there are many small, minor resistant points and technical support levels that are looked at by some analysts. And may or may not be valid depending on what you believe, right? There's no market prognostication or prognosticator that can tell you which way the market's going to go. And so, it seemed to be a culmination down in the 21,000 something at New Year's Eve. That was brutal, New Year's Eve. A 4-hour market open, usually it's a lot longer than that. And in 4 hours, it dropped something like 600 something points. So, the shutdown is continuing weeks now. Market doesn't seem to care. I think sometimes Wall Street thinks once the government's gridlocked, like when you have the houses split between red and blue, Democrats and Republicans, they can't get anything done. And market loves that. They don't like government interference. Of course, there are people that believe that government interference is good and necessary, and there are others that believe that government interference is nothing but interference. So I can fathom and give you the opinion that I think the market doesn't care right now about the government shutdown because it doesn't want the government to be able to function. As funny as that may be. So, the shutdown will hurt gross domestic product, gross national product, as it's now called, by, I thought it's something like a 10% a month or something like that. 0.1%, not 10%, 0.1%. So it'll take a little bite out of the GNP, GDP. A couple of interesting articles out at yahoofinance.com today. And one of them from the IRS, which I thought was interesting. U.S. government tax agency IRS said on Wednesday, out from Reuters, that it would not impose penalties on many taxpayers who had too little federal income tax withheld from their pay last year, or who paid less than the estimated tax liabilities. In a concession that follows a sweeping U.S. tax overhaul enacted in late 2017, the IRS lowered its threshold for waiving the penalty to help taxpayers affected by tax law changes ushered in by the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. What that mean, if you withheld too little taxes, a certain level, they would penalize you. So maybe you underpaid by 0.1% or 0.2% or whatever. You'd be penalized. But out on Reuters today, it says tax penalties will be waived generally for taxpayers who have paid at least 85% of their total liability through withholding quarterly estimated tax payments or a combination of the two. The threshold was 90%. Okay? So if you paid 90% of what you owed and required prepayment to pay, well, now it's 85%. How long they can keep like that, who knows? So, the new policy also comes in at a time when the IRS has been hit by partial government shutdown, now in its 26th day with no end in sight. The agency said earlier this week it would bring back more than 46,000 furloughed employees back to work without pay to handle annual tax returns, refunds, and other tasks. About one quarter of the federal government shut down on December 22nd over President Donald Trump's demand for $5.7 billion to build a wall along the U.S.-Mexican border, which Democrats oppose. So one quarter of the Fed's government is shut down. U.S. tax filing season is set to begin on January 28th and last until April 15th. Democrats who criticized the withholding tables as inaccurate last year are now raising questions whether the IRS could provide refunds on time. So there you go. Okay. Good news for the American taxpayer so far. A little bit of good news for those of you that have to pay in ahead of time. Also, I saw another article on Yahoo Finance. It was kind of interesting. But now I don't think I can find it, which is kind of interesting. Billionaire Sam Zell, out from Bloomberg, kind of an interesting looking fellow. Sam Zell came out and said, quote, "For the first time in my life, I bought gold because it is a good hedge." Sam Zell is the founder of Equity Group Investments and a billionaire. Supply is shrinking, and that is going to have a positive impact on the price. Now, remember, that is an article in the opinion of Mr. Zell as portrayed by Bloomberg. So this is not a solicitation or recommendation to buy or sell anything. It's just one man's opinion and what he did. Okay. So upward and onward. Well, from October, November, December is pretty brutal. I can comfortably say in October, when the market fell, I wasn't really too concerned, although some stops were hit in some portfolios, stops being as if they drop down, we sell. November kind of accelerated a little bit, and some of the things that normally go up when stocks go down started to turn down as well. I deem that as contagion. And then, of course, I became a little bit more concerned, and more stops were hit. And then in December, it got pretty ugly, in my opinion, and more stops were hit. And then Christmas Eve was pretty brutal, 600-something on Christmas Eve, which is usually normally a very quiet day. And so that could have been a culmination event, capitulation, as they say in the trade. Usually markets don't stop until we have a capitulation. I give up, and we see massive downward movement, and 600 points was not completely out of the ordinary. We'd seen that before in the recent months of November and October. But to happen on a Christmas Eve when it's basically a quiet day was pretty eye-opening. So that may have been capitulation. Since then, the market has kind of gone straight up, not really. One day in, I think, January, Apple came out with some news. and that turned the market down. I won't tell you what the news was. You can look it up yourself. Regulators shine, frown on when I mention a particular stock, so we'll just leave it at that. So those of us looking at the markets for a living, such as myself, have seen happier holidays. That is true. That said, there is some good news in all of this setback that we saw in October, November, December. With declining stock prices comes opportunity. Now, most people think declining stock prices are terrible. Well, I saw opportunity, and with the approval of regulators, was okay to publish that as written. Although portfolio balances maybe have likely decreased with even some of your profits minimized, or maybe some of you even went negative. We do have a chance when the market bottoms to lock in some great yields on some solid companies. Companies that are said to be the bedrock of the American economy. Names have been around for decades, some over a century. And I myself published that I was excited about what this meant for investors. There's opportunity in the darkness. And that's what I saw. Many of these great companies pay dividends, which are scheduled payments to stockholders every so often, usually every quarter. Since dividends are listed as dollar amount, in other words, say you buy a stock for a certain amount of dollars, then I say we'll pay you a dollar share every year. A dollar share. They don't say 10% or 5%. They say a dollar share. When the price of a stock drops, its yield on the investment goes up. Now, why does it do that? Many of these companies that I stamp stalwart, bedrock companies, many of them increased dividends for decades. Some of them have. Some have increased dividends over 50 years. Increased them, never dropped them. And paid them. For instance, here's an example. If a stock, ABC Company, fictional, says it will pay $1 a share annually, and the price before this all started was $10. You pay $10 for a stock, and you get $1 in dividends. You get 10%. Pretty easy math there. Now, along comes our nasty correction over the last few months, and let's say the stock of ABC drops to $8, 20% drop from 10 to 8. Many stocks in this recent correction that we saw in October, November, December saw that percentage drop. Some more. If the company does pay the dividends as scheduled, the dollar, and you spend $8 buying a share, and you still get $1 in dividends, that's 12.5%. So you did get 10. Now you get 12.5. Bingo. Stock got hammered, but buyers at the new level of $8 get a much higher return than buyers before the crash. From CNBC, which said the market suffered the worst December since 1929. That's a milestone. About 38% of companies on the New York Stock Exchange and the NASDAQ were trading at 52-week lows. That's the worst December since 1929. That's pretty astounding. So I saw a unique opportunity unfolding. Remember, when bad things happen, opportunities can arise. And right now, and then I saw a tremendous potential opportunity being given to investors when the market fell. Why? The market fell, and now the dividend yield on stocks are higher if they pay the dividend. Yes, your balances may have been hit. And yes, it may have looked somewhat bleak, and I'm sure that some of you are still down because the market is not back to where it was. When I get the chance to pick up some great companies at bargain prices, paying nice dividends, which were higher before the market setback began, I take a hard look at altering strategies to take advantage of this opportunity. In other words, instead of buying like a mutual fund, I might buy individual stocks. So we think of this. The S&P sat at 29.29. The S&P is a market. Okay, it's got a number, like the Dow's got a number. The S&P is at 29.29. Today it is at 26-something, I believe. Today the S&P is at 26.31. Well, on September 17th, 2018, it sat at 29.29. And on the Christmas Eve, it fell to 23.51. So if you take 29.29 on September 17th and divide one into the other, 23.51, it's low, 12/24/2018, it's low of that day. That's a 19.8% decrease. That said, the window opens wider and wider every time the market goes down, and I cannot ignore that. This means if we pick up some of these great U.S. stalwart companies that make up some of the best-regarded companies in the country at beat-up levels, we can possibly lock in great dividends and also have the possibility of the stock prices going up if a recovery happens. Now, we looked at 23.51. We're at 24.323. So, indeed, we have seen a lift. And historically, not absolutely or exclusively, historically, when the markets fall hard and fast, the pendulum effect may come into play. In other words, when the markets sell off, some believe that the pendulum may sell off, and it sells off really more than it should. And then when it comes back, it usually comes back more than it should, so some believe. For instance, in 2009, the Dow sat at 6,626. 6,626. Remember, the Dow is at 24,323 today. It sat at 6,626. And in about 8 years, skyrocketed to where it is today. A quadruple. Almost. Well, more than a quadruple, really, if you take the high. If you add that increase and add dividends to that, and you can imagine results for those grabbing stocks at the bleakest of times that pay dividends, what they may have made. What is the opportunity right now? While most investors and possibly advisors might be seeing darkness and lots of red, I see opportunity. I was always a fan of dividend-paying stocks, as those of you long listeners of the show know, and of great companies. And now I am super concentrated on this strategy once again. Great opportunities in life don't happen every day. Indeed, the Christmas Eve sell-off was the worst since 1929. That spells opportunity with an O. So when these occur, you have to sit up and take notice, have vision. And while blood runs in the streets for many, look up and find the hidden opportunities. That's the way I'm thinking today. So we would ask, who wouldn't want to own a basket of solid companies, U.S. solid companies, and maybe some even overseas companies, with the possibilities of some great dividends, with higher yields because of beat-up prices, and the possibility that stock prices could go up? Now, they could go down, but I'm looking at the opportunity. And even if the market does go lower from here, our possible yields will only go up from there, right? In a weird way, we can hope the market goes even lower because we'll get higher yields. Strange how things can be perceived. Remember, dividends are not guaranteed. Some dividends are taxable in certain accounts. Dividends can be cut or eliminated at any time. They can also be increased at any time. Dividends do not guarantee against losses, and investing involves risk. And this is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities, of course, right? Okay. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station, so we'll kind of be right back and talk a little bit more.
Lots of candy off my mouth. Maybe I'll even pissed. money than you have ever seen. Maybe I just want all the friends. I'm gonna insulate my body in cream. I'm gonna light my cigarettes with $100 bills. Ow!
And you're tuned to Money Matters, show number 281. Up and away, onward. Are we? No, it's hard to tell. Okay. So, one of the reasons the stock market is moving a little bit today, so says Emily McCormick at Yahoo Finance today. U.S. stocks spiked following a Wall Street Journal report that U.S. officials are considering easing tariffs on Chinese goods. Funny, she wrote the sentence like this: U.S. stocks spiked following a Wall Street Journal report that U.S. officials are considering easing tariffs on Chinese tariffs. Now, at least when I write, I never use the same word twice, especially within four words of each other. Considering easing tariffs on Chinese tariffs. So, Emily, bad. She goes on to say that earnings season, which is what we're in, 11.6% of the S&P 500's stocks have reported quarterly results, and that earnings are beating by 2.1% so far, with 73% of the reporting companies exceeding their bottom line estimates. This compares to a 4.9% beat rate for 70% of the companies over the past 3 years. So, beating estimates, but not as many as used to. Some bank stocks had revenue misses, earning misses when they reported. Some of them the other way around. So, there you go. She goes on to say, in her opinion, it has been a relatively strong start to the year for equities, with the S&P closing higher for 8 of the past 11 trading days. It has been rather up. I mean, it really has been up. So we'll see if it continues. So I covered last show called The Death Cross. We covered that, so I don't think I'll go over that again. But one of the things that has been making the news, at least a little bit, is the fact that the U.S. deficits continue to skyrocket. So let's talk about that. What is a deficit? A deficit is when you spend more than you make. So, although reigning in the national deficit is all but vanished from government speak nowadays, the problem is still a problem. With the first $1 trillion in U.S. debt taking somewhere around 220 years to amass, beginning around 1776, took about 200 and something years to go into $1 trillion in debt. Now we run up that amount every year. every year. Okay, 220 years to run up $1 trillion in debt. Now we're running that almost every year. Talk about compounding and accelerating, right? Exponentially. Talk about an overspending family member. The lips of Dick Cheney ring in my mind, where in 2003 came the infamous quote. And now apparently the common belief in Washington, deficits don't matter. Now he preceded that by saying Reagan proved that deficits don't matter. But the key words there with deficits don't matter. Well, I don't know about your house, but deficits in my house do matter. And I bet you a dime to $1 trillion that deficits will matter to the United States at some point. In other words, all is well until it isn't. You never hear the debate on most new major news outlets now, right? GOP, grand old party Republicans, used to say, let's get the deficits under control. That was their go-to hot button. But that's been banished. I never even hear it anymore, or so it seems. Whether they do matter or whether they don't matter is rarely debated even anymore, but the debate is certainly still valid. It's a still valid debate. Do deficits matter? In my mind, yes. Because if deficits didn't matter, how come historically countries in the past that continually run higher and higher deficits run into severe trouble economically? So it's always a prudent decision to at least listen to an argument that might have dire consequences for the country, the United States of America. And indeed, if the United States of America has problems, the globe will have problems. Historically, deficits, spending more than you make, have been the death knell of not only families, cities, countries, but civilizations. It has killed off civilizations. Rome lasted 1,000 years. Actually, it lasted 507 years. It eventually fell for a few reasons. One of them being a degradation of its currency. They debased its currency. Its legal tender coins, which had a lot of silver in them in early times, basically ended up toward the end with very little silver in them. Kind of like our money. So the thinking goes, is the U.S. immune to such catastrophic endings as is brought about by a severely abused currency? Or is it really different this time? Sadly, in my opinion, no, we are not immune. And no, it is never different. Fewer more qualified than I, to weigh in on the debate, than former U.S. Comptroller General, Mr. David Walker. If you don't know what a Comptroller General does, the Comptroller General from Wikipedia, the Comptroller General of the United States is the director of the Government Accountability Office, the GAO, a legislative branch agency established by Congress in 1921 to ensure the fiscal and managerial accountability of the federal government. Sounds like that guy would know. Mr. Walker held the office from 1998 to 2008, and he left. I did have the pleasure of interviewing him shortly after he left. I was trying to get an interview with David Walker for about a year and a half, and then he quit. And I went, oh, no. But then I thought, hey, he quit. Maybe he'll do the interview. And he did. Guy that sits next to the president or a few seats down, I got to get him on the air, and we talked. So in Washington, and when we talked about a movie that he was in that was coming out about the deficit, and he talked about his input on the deficit. Maybe I'll try to interview him again. He wrote an article in the Washington Times, Putting America's Finances in Order. And he basically said, quote, it is abundantly clear that neither of the two major U.S. parties is fiscally responsible. Republicans focus on tax cuts, while Democrats focus on spending. And neither party focuses on the bottom line or long term. So to get this clear in my head, what he's saying here is the two main political parties that run our country are not fiscally responsible. Given the U.S. is the largest economy on the planet, and it being run by fiscally irresponsible people, according to David Walker, doesn't sound like such a good plan. Neither for the U.S. nor for the globe, for that matter, because the influence that the U.S. economy has on the world. We found that out in 08 and 09, right? The earthquake that shook the world. The Congressional Budget Office, CBO, projects the federal government will eventually reach the, my words here, cut up the credit card moment in about a decade, spending more on interest payments than national defense. Let me repeat that. Spending more on interest payments than it spends on national defense. Put in real figures, the U.S. will have to shell out about $1 trillion in interest within 10 years, because I think the national budget for defense is $800 and $900 billion, many times more than the next guy. A lot of you might say, ooh, good. Well, it would be good if they took that money and spent it on something that produces something. For those willing not to do the advanced math here, let's put it in plain English. A big chunk of your income, tax money, their income, will go to nothing productive. It's just interest payments, right? You make interest payments on a credit card. Your money is gone. It doesn't reduce your principal at all. Basically, it's like piling up cash in a mound and setting it on fire. Interest payments are basically money poured down the proverbial rat hole. $1 trillion poured down a very big rat hole. But the key word here is down, in a way, the rat hole. Many argue or think that the government, U.S. government, has never had a problem before. Well, it actually has, but not openly to most people. I will ask people, has the U.S. government ever defaulted? Well, various articles say it's defaulted about half a dozen times, but let's say the most recent default. A default is you do something that you said you wouldn't do, or you don't do something you said you would when it comes to money. So prior to 72, 71, somewhere near, the U.S. dollar used to say receipt on it, a gold certificate. Okay. Certificate meant you could take it. I could take my dollar in when I was a kid to the bank, and they'd give me a piece of silver. Certificate. It was silver exchanged for my dollar. Well, what happened right around 71, 72? Defunct President Lyndon Johnson had his war in Southeast Asia and his critically acclaimed war on poverty. So he was fighting two wars, the war on poverty and the war in Southeast Asia. And he was printing a lot of these certificates, gold certificates, silver certificates. And Charles de Gaulle, the guy with the big nose who ran France at the time, probably did some advanced math and did some astute observation and thought, the U.S. spending a lot of money. And I don't think it has as much gold or silver that its certificates say they do. So Charles started cashing in his dollars for gold and silver. And we're pretty certain some other countries saw that and said, hey, what's Chuck doing over there in France? Well, he's cashing in his dollars, U.S. dollars, for gold and silver. Well, why is he doing that? Well, those of people that are minorly educated in economics would know he's doing that because he doesn't believe the U.S. has as much gold or silver as they say they have, or that they are represented by the amount of certificates that they've printed. So I can assume somebody went to Richard Nixon at some point and said, we have a problem. And they said, what's the problem? Well, the problem is Charles de Gaulle of France and now some other countries are cashing in their dollars for gold and silver. And Nixon probably asked, what's the problem? Well, we don't have enough gold and silver. We're eventually going to run out. And usually countries do not want to run out of gold and silver. Now, the U.S. certificate, the dollar at that point, was signed by the Your treasurer signs, says we promise to pay. Silver or gold. In so many words. So Nixon in 1972 came on television and said, we are now going off the gold standard. We are basically not going to give you gold for your dollar. So everybody holding the dollar would say, wait a minute. It says so right on the dollar, signed by the U.S. Treasurer. Well, we're not going to do it. That's a default. That's a default. So many of you think the U.S. government hasn't had a problem before. Well, not as big as the problem as it may soon have. But things are fine. Like I said, things are fine until they aren't fine. People that had gold certificates or silver certificates prior to the hour that Nixon made that statement were fine. And an hour later, they weren't, if you wanted to exchange it for gold and silver. Some say that the government will just print the money. Well, that's what it does now. True, again, they print the money. But when you look on the U.S. dollar, it says note. U.S. Treasury note. Federal Reserve note. What's a note? A note is an IOU. So it's no longer a certificate. I have something for your dollar. It's a note. I will pay you something for your dollar. What will they pay you? Well, if you go to the Federal Reserve, who's dollar bill it is, and asked to be paid, they only have dollar bills. So you have an IOU from a company that has nothing but IOUs. They have some gold, but they won't give it to you. So when you print the money, you'll notice there's a number on it, serial number. So when they print money, there's some guy up there in Washington that makes a tick mark on a ledger sheet. They actually don't make a tick mark, but they keep track of it. They know how much money they're printing. They track that. That's why those little serial numbers are on there. So, will the government just print the money? Well, that's what it's been doing, just printing the money. So, will printing money save us? This opinion? Mine? Doubtful. In fact, I'll go so far as to say no, printing money solves nothing. Why? Well, because money is just colored paper with pictures of dead presidents on them, right? Durable colored paper, but still paper. Now, not many will be able to draw the conclusion or explain to me why printing money doesn't solve anything. I've had people on social media say, well, why don't you the government just print up $1 million and give it to everybody in the country? Then nobody will be broke. Well, others may be able to think, no, that wouldn't work for some reason, but many will be able to explain to me why it won't work. People know it won't work, but they don't know why it won't work. Printing money doesn't solve anything. People think that it might. Indeed, the U.S. government thinks it solves problems. If they didn't think it solved problems, then they wouldn't do it. So why do they print money? They must think it solves a problem. They must think printing paper solves something. So let's just break it down logistically without saying why it doesn't solve anything. I can cover that in another show. Why doesn't printing money solve anything, solve economic problems? How do we know that? Well, if printing money solved economic problems, and many countries print money, how come we still have economic problems? You don't need advanced math skills to see that one coming. Just kind of think it through. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. We'll be right back.
We're in the money.
Yes, we are.
We're in the money. We've got a lot of what it takes to get along. We're in the money. The skies are sunny. Old man depression, you are through, you've done us wrong. We never see a headline, but a red line today. And when we see the landlord, we can look that guy right in the eye. We're in the money. Come on, my honey. Let's spend it now.
and you're tuned to Money Matters on your community radio station. Okay, so we got a couple more minutes. Phone lines are open, 530-265-9555 if you'd like to call, 530-265-9555. If you're hearing the show pre-recorded or post-recorded or however they say that, then you won't be able to call 530-265-9555. So, where do we go from here? I mean, that's really the thing that people ask me. You know, I get stopped a lot, you know, a whole lot. And people ask me, what's going to happen? Should I buy this? Should I buy that? Well, on answering what you should buy, I can never answer that because everybody's individual situation is individual, right? And so, depending on what I think you should buy depends on you and your level of risk and what your obligations are and your assets. And so I get that question all the time. Should I buy this? What do you think of that stock? You know, that's, you know, I don't comment on that. You can get yourself into trouble. I tell somebody to buy the stock of ABC and it goes down, the guy comes back to me. So without knowing your complete financial situation, without knowing your complete financial situation, it's hard for me to recommend anything. So whoever you work with, whatever advisor you work with, or even if you're on your own, you know, you definitely have to lay out your complete financial information in front of you so you can look at what you've got, look at what your expenses may be. I'm not a big fan. You know, I met with advisors years ago. Even though I was doing my own stuff, I'd always call one in just for fun. And they would always show me these illustrations that were based on hypothetical gains. So the most famous one would be, we're going to take a historic, you know, gauge of the market, how much has increased over the years, and we're going to apply that. And they'll say, well, if the market increased 10%, you'll make this much if you give us this much. And it'd be hypothetic. You know, they show you a lot of that on annuities as well. If the market went up this much, you'll make this much. And so I'm not a big fan. Somebody goes into a big advisor and they give him a big portfolio with all these fancy numbers and charts on there, and they're impressed by that. And they say, well, they really must know what they're doing. Well, most of these big charts are computer generated nowadays. You plug in a number and it spits out 20 pages of real fancy colored paper that have all these wonderful figures on them. So I'm never a big fan of that. I'm a big fan of knowing what you have and knowing what your obligations are and assuming that the market gets no growth. You know, I don't think I've ever come up to somebody and say, well, you're going to make this much. First of all, I think that's illegal. I don't think you could even say that. I don't think maybe you could say if the market goes up 10%, you're going to make this much. But then why not make it look better and say if the market goes up 100%, you're going to double your money. So I'm not a big fan of those. And I've seen a lot of illustrations. But some people come in and they like to go with somebody else because they gave them these 30, 40-page projections. And they're projections. That's why I run a couple of companies. And, you know, one of the things I always hated as a salesman when years and years ago, selling securities or whatever I was selling, they'd say, give me your quota. Give me your projections. Well, it's just projections. I can make it up. And if my projections or quota was too low, they'd say, give me another projection. Okay. What do you want to hear? It doesn't mean anything. I'd rather say, have a person who works for me saying, give me your plan. What do you plan on doing? Not give me your projections. Or what is your goal? You got to have a goal. I'd like to get $30 million under management in a year or whatever the goal would be. So you can give me your plan or give me your goal, but don't give me a projection because that's just pulling it out of your 6 o'clock. It doesn't mean anything to me. So I would caution those of you that look at some of these spreadsheets and look at some of these projections. You know, they don't mean anything. A lot of people go with the person that can best print the most nicest looking projection. You know, oh, he's got the fanciest brochure and he's got leather covered binder and your name's printed on it. And it's like, okay, fine. Anyway, so this has been show 281. Been on the air since 2005. Broadcaster since 1999. Voiceovers before that. And I've been studying economics. Basically got my first book on economics at age 14. That would make it 1969. It was called You Can Profit from the Coming Devaluation of the Dollar. The book was right. Once I picked it up, I couldn't put it down. I cannot build woodwork or shelves. I can pretty good with cars and bikes and all that, but woodwork? No. The toilet paper rolls in my house hang sideways. And Molly bolts? Oh, gosh. Those are my nemesis. I can't hang a heavy picture. You know, like the old adage, don't know a knot, tie a lot. That's me. I don't know any of those fancy knots. So in any case, you have been listening to show 281. I'd like to remind you that discussions in this show should definitely not be construed as a specific recommendation or any kind of investment advice. It's just information disseminated by a man who has an opinion. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. Makes sense. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors, Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Remember that the indices mentioned are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. And past performance is no guarantee of future results. Investing involves risk. Depending on the types of investments, there may be varying degrees of risk. Investors should be prepared to bear loss, including total loss of principal. So it's been my pleasure to bring you the show today. You can peruse our website. It is free. Our way of saying thank you for listening to community radio station. The website, moneymanagementradio.com. You will find my history and some newsletters. And get on the mailing list. We don't spam you or anything. Doesn't cost anything. All the past shows are on there, most of them. And if you have questions about the show, just email the program director at your radio station and they will forward it to me. I'd like to say, have a great day, God bless, and don't worry. Not one person in government can really make that big of a difference. They can do some damage, but the United States of America, the system will stand strong. So fret not. And stop pounding on each other, would you? Republicans, stop pounding on Democrats. And Democrats, stop pounding on Republicans. You know, can't we just all get along? All right. Ciao. Ta-ta for now.